The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is January 4th, 2016, and we are sponsored by Dr. William Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com, Sorinex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Bert's a regular on here, and his dad will be on February, and I do believe he's going to be on every month with us now, starting in 2016. Also, too, Hearts Collision, that's for New York State residents here, 518-477-7937. And we got two new people with us here, Steven Santangelo, who's a regular on the show every month. His stuff, his products are killer. So I'm going to read it right off to you. Unleash the strength with relentless metabolic endurance through 100% pure, wholesome, organic foods. Athlete's Choice is the only product with the ultimate results you're looking for. I'm taking a ton of his stuff right now, between the greens and the winter formula. Knock on wood, I've been pretty damn good with everything and under a lot of strain. His stuff is superior. I mean, great stuff. So you go out to Primal Creations at AOL.com, or you can go out on Facebook. Go out to Facebook and type in Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, S-A-N-T-A-N-G-E-L-O .75. Tell them Motivation Muscle sent you. I promise you, I've got probably seven friends of mine on this stuff right now. They can't say enough about it. He's a great guy, great guest, strong dude, mid-60s, man, and the guy's still into it. It's awesome. And we also got another good person with us, too, Jason Fuller, who's a Marine. He's got a product called PlanAYearOfWorkouts.com. He sent it to me. It's basically a workout book. You can put it flat on any table, wherever you are training. And on every 24th workout, there's a section to track your progress and set new goals. This is what I thought was really pretty slick about, because we got the best people listening here, I'm telling you. This guy's been in martial arts for 23 years, and he's been pumping iron, as he says, for 18 years. But he found us, and this is where he listens to us. His home gym is in a shed in his backyard. That's typical of our listeners, man. These guys and girls could work in a closet and still make gains. And we welcome Jason and Steven on with our family. I really appreciate the sponsorship. Let's see. Go out to Fiorello Barbell and code and download the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle free ebook. That's what we're going to talk about. Change your life. Commit. Don't forget our two products, Strength Times Power Equals Success and the Winner's Circle. And we're ready to go. Today is our first show, and I couldn't be happier. I've got two of the best on today. I've got Mike Gillette on with me. And I have got David Whitley later with me. And if anybody knows these two guys, this is the real deal. And I got to tell you, I haven't done shows in about 10 days, and I'm fired as hell, man. And I it's good to be back. We're going to take the world over this year. I mean it. I'm coming. Look out. I am coming. Now, I want to give you a little bit about Mike first before we bring Mike in. Mike was an Army paratrooper, a SWAT commander, a bodyguard to Fortune 500 executives, a record-breaking, motivational strongman. He's a writer and author, and he's a speaker, too, and he's an all-around really good egg, as they say. So, Mike, welcome to Motivation Muscle, sir. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you, too, Eric. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Give everybody a little bit about yourself, and we're going to move in to something that I love, this stuff, and Mike and I really thrive on this, setting expectations and learning to hit the bullseye. So take it away, sir.
Well, you hit a lot of the professional high points. I spent some time in the military, then college happened, the those two things were supposed to originally be related. I actually was attending college on an ROTC scholarship with the objective of returning to active duty as an officer. While I was in college, I was in a climbing accident. It was pretty significant, broke my back, my ankles. And at the time, I was told that while I would certainly be able to walk again, I wouldn't be able to do much of anything beyond that. Couldn't run, couldn't jump out of airplanes. I was medically processed out of the military. I spent 4.5 years trying to overcome that whole prognosis and was eventually able to do so. Got myself to the point where I was capable enough to legitimately pursue a career in law enforcement, which I did with some gusto. And in the police academy, I did very well. My law enforcement time seemed to also do well, but I was exposed to training at a very early stage of my career and found that I liked doing this. Was like, you know, learning to teach and become credentialed to teach other law enforcement personnel. So I became a police academy instructor, and that sort of begat a lot of other training qualifications and further interest in that entire area. So my training resume expanded, you know, really sort of outpaced my normal professional development just as a police officer. So while I was expanding in the training realm, I was going further and further away from my day job. Concurrently, I was pursuing martial arts pretty aggressively in those days as well, and I was connecting with some pretty significant people in that arena and was also traveling and assisting them in their seminars and sort of developing myself in that context simultaneously. So I was developing a very robust trainer resume to the point that in 2001, I left law enforcement after 12 years and was involved in training full time subsequent to that. And a lot of things happened in the world and just, you know, a lot of lucky breaks. I found myself doing training for the airline industry post 9/11, developed a very significant training program that was sort of counterterrorism related for Disney in the same time period. It was all geared towards behavior detection and intervention, you know, potential attacks on those parks. I wrote curriculum for the Department of Homeland Security while serving as the director of training for the Institute of Security Studies at UNLV. So I was, you know, kind of projected pretty fast into the training realm. In 2006, I left for the private sector again, but in a training capacity, working for a company based in Las Vegas that, because of some training relationships, got very heavily involved in the executive protection field. So 06 through 2011, I was deeply involved in executive protection assignments. We had a lot of short-term clients. I was project manager for several long-term clients. And that sort of served as the catalyst for what I do now. I found myself so engrossed in that world, which is very insular. Lots of travel, you know, bad sleep, bad food, you know, it's hard to get your training and all of those things. And I realized that if I were going to continue down that path, and at this point, you know, I was becoming a fairly mature individual age-wise, that I was sort of running out of time to do some of the things that I still wanted to do as Mike Gillette. I wanted to impact the world in a larger way. I wanted to help share all of the things that I'd learned and what was a fairly interesting and unique life, you know, both the physical training methods and mental training methods. And I stepped away from all of that with, you know, no real fallback plan other than, you know, hoping that I was going to be able to do these things to the extent that I would be successful. And that's when, in 2012, I really focused on developing product and doing coaching and so forth, working with people in to a physical extent at a certain level, but really sort of targeting the mental side of things, because I really felt that that was sort of an underserved arena, and a lot of the people that were populating that arena were, they're well-meaning, But I'll just put it this way. There are things called sports psychologists, for example, and they know a lot about stuff. But how many of them have done anything? How many of them have actually coached someone to the point where they could do something that they couldn't do before? And not that many, which does not negate the potential value of what sports psychologists necessarily do. But most of them, I believe, are untested. So, you know, you've got a hypothesis. It could be a really interesting sounding hypothesis, but it may simply be that. And the hypothesis is not that powerful. It's not a methodology until it's been tested and actually works. And I have been my own methodology. I have tested my methods on thousands of people over the years. I know what I do works because I've done it. I've seen other people be successful with it. So I'm basically just a very pragmatic guy, you know, trying to spread a particular gospel. Today we're going to be talking about expectations. I really preach the gospel of high expectations, but in addition to just talking about it, I also provide tools that help people get to that point. So that's what people mostly need to know about Mike Gillette. That's the business I'm in, helping people get better. I want everyone to experience or have the opportunity to touch what it means to be superhuman in whatever arena is relevant to that person.
No, without a doubt. And this is a perfect setting for expectations because we know right now the gyms are full.
And they are.
And it's going to be very interesting in the next 6 weeks how you see everything shake out. Now, Mike, we know there's a lot of stuff out there. We know there's a lot of material out there to seek and read and purchase, and obviously you can read online. And one thing that struck me, and I know this about you, but I don't think this can ever be hit upon enough, is the practical way of you can have plenty of theory, but if you've never gone out and have done any of it, that would kind of fall short on me. Now, that doesn't mean I don't respect what you say, but what do you feel? Well, I'll tell you how I feel right now is this. I don't think you can ever, ever discount going out and being your own guinea pig, because too many people might do a few things or borrow a few things from somebody else or whatever, but they never really get into it. They never get the scars on them, so to speak. What do you feel the difference is between somebody that's gone out and really – really put their time in, their blood, sweat, and tears? You know, they've been mangled up a few times. I mean, Mike's going to talk about Mike's had another, I call them severe injuries. He's had them before. He's had a tear. I've had a tear. What separates guys like us from, I don't even want to call them armchair lifters or whatever, but what is it that's so different between us and, say, somebody with a lot of theory that's done very little?
Well, the I think primarily, Eric, is there's what you know and there's what you know. It's simply meaning that we can, you know, we can read a book, we can attend a lecture, we can watch a YouTube video, and we know something, you know, whatever the information that was presented, we can absorb it. And it's like, okay, but you don't know it until you've lived it here. And here's an example that I get a lot. Last year, I launched a DVD and it was, just all about this topic. You know, mental improvement, what sorts of habits support, you know, improving yourself mentally? You know, how do you set effective goals? How do you assess whether or not the means by which you're pursuing those goals is even working for you? And it was sold by many people when it launched, and it did pretty well. But this is a topic that it's, I don't know if you'd call it polarizing, because I don't think people respond negatively to it per se, but it is less understood than it should be, in my opinion, because you know, everybody sort of accepts the fact that, you know, the mental part of any process, any goal is pretty significant, but not that many people work that part of it. You know, if you ask any athlete, you know, is how important is the mind to what you do? You know, like, let's say they play basketball, or they play tennis, they'll say, oh, it's very important. It's like, okay, is how important is very? Over 50%? Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, is it over 60? Oh, for sure. Okay, well, so it's more important than physical training. It's more important than, say, 60%. So what are you doing about it? You know, and you get a blank stare. Not that many people really have thought about it to the extent that they've got a system in place for mm-hmm. developing that facet of themselves. Mm-hmm. So back to this DVD, there were so many emails going out and so many banner ads and that sort of thing when it was in its launch mode that I was getting emails, even though I wasn't connected with the sale of it.
Yep.
And there were some people who were returning them, which happens. And sure. I would get these emails that would say, well, you know, I'm a coach of this and that, and I've been in the game for this many years, and I've read a lot of books and gone to a lot of seminars, and this, I saw the DVD, and it sounds like what, you know, other sports psychologists talk about. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, it's like if you buy a book on powerlifting, do you really think there's going to be something in there that doesn't touch on the deadlift, the squat, you know, the bench press? Those things are pretty important to that field of study. So I got a few of these emails, and that was sort of the common thread. I've seen this stuff before. Well, here's my point to your listeners, Eric, is you can know something, but if you don't do that something, you don't know that thing.
Yep.
And that's the difference between people who actively challenge themselves and those who just like to talk about things like this, you know, the armchair experts.
Yep.
They know it, but they don't do it. So what they know is what they think they know. And I trained with a very famous but extremely controversial martial artist a few years back. And he says, you know, over and over, you know, you either know what you can do or you think you know. And he's in his late 60s. He still tests himself all the time. He calls that process calibration. You know, he wants to know what he can do every day. He wants his students to know exactly where they are every day in terms of their ability to perform. And that's what it is. The difference is simply, you know, thinking you know versus actually knowing, because part of knowing is doing.
Yep. Well, Mike, I'll tell you this, all right? You know, you hit it again. You know, obviously these coaches, you know, let's face it. Everybody's looking for the piece of gold that's going to tell you how to get bigger, stronger, faster, more enduring, better fighter, et cetera, et cetera. There is no golden nugget. I hate to break it to you, all right? There's a lot of good information out there. But like you said with the athlete, and I always saw it this way too. Most people, if they're in that elite class, which is maybe a 1%, if that, they get by physically. So they don't give a lot of thought mentally. But here's the thing. When they hit the wall or they get an injury, then they got a problem because now they've had some structural damage. But I know when I tore my bicep in Iceland, I initially had some mental damage too because I never had an injury like that. I'd been very lucky the majority of my career. You know, you have, if you're in the game, you're going to have nicks, bruises, bangs, pulls, et cetera, et cetera. But I never had a surgical injury that had to be, you know, attended to. And this is where I see the big fallout with a lot of athletes is this. Yeah, everything's great. Everything's going good. Yep. Everybody loves me. Everybody's praising me. And suddenly something happens. Now you see who's going to stick with you, number one. Number two, you're going to have to see how you handle this mentally. And I tell you what, I've seen a lot of good athletes go up in smoke because they can't get past the idea, oh, me? I got an injury. Oh, me? I got to have surgery. I got news for you, man. these things happen. This is part of what we do. And that's where I see the big thing especially happening. And can you rise from this? And all these expectations you had prior to the injury, can you run over the top of that and keep progressing and get to where you want to get? I see, to me, and maybe you can give me even a higher percentage, I see it in my eyes like it's 50-50. Are you going to come back or not? If you are coming back, can you return to that point where you were, and can you keep progressing? That's a big thing right there. And then secondly is this. I Mike Gillette has got more than enough material out there. He could load my head up with everything that he's got. All right? The guy's lived it, done it, still doing it. But that doesn't mean Eric Fiorello is going to accept it. I might read it all. I might say, geez, you know, Mike's got some really good points, et cetera, et cetera. But is it going to, as my father said, is it going to go through that cement head of yours or not? All right? That's the big thing right there. And I would hope it would work for you. I mean, you know, the guy's taking time. He's got decades of training in him. And, you know, you're throwing out your money there. You're paying for a good product. Is it going to register with you? That's the next big thing. But I think in my case, like with my expectations in 2016, I've got such high expectations for my businesses, for Iceland. I want to go to Scotland for Christmas next year, and whatever is in between. They exceed anything that I've ever thought of in my life, because everyone is like building on the other. And when you can build on each other and have success off each other, that's going to feed you hitting that bullseye. And for anybody that's ever shot any type of arrow or marksmanship or any of that stuff, think of that big, big, that big figure to hit, all right? And in the center is that big red dot, your bullseye. That's how I'm looking at everything right now for 2016. 2016, I felt I turned the corner at the end of December. Now it's just onward and upward. And that's the way I'm setting myself up to be able to conquer everything I want to do. So, you know, I think the material is great. I really do. Don't get me wrong. I read tons of stuff. I love to read. I love this. The passion I have for physical strength, culture, power, everything, you know, the mental and all, it's great. I love all that. But I think and I've said this on shows with Mike and shows with everybody, and Mike has related us kind of the same thing. If you don't get out there and do it yourself and really kind of push the dial with yourself, I think you can be good at what you do. I think you can tell a nice story. But I'd rather sit down with Mike Gillette, a guy that's done it and written about it, but I'd rather just sit with him and talk with him. I'll read his book. But see, that's where you get the advantage, I think, there. So take it away, Mike.
Well, you brought up an interesting point a moment ago. You're talking about the athletes that, can get derailed. And yep. It's really more mentally by injury, you know.
Yeah.
And the term injury, I mean, we could substitute, you know, any sort of obstacle.
Yep.
As those things happen, you know, if you're a college athlete, something happens to your academic eligibility, you know, how are you going to deal with that? You know, whatever the block is, the thing that gets in your way, how do you deal with that? And that's a really interesting topic to me, because, you know, and I always bring up when I talk to you anecdotes from the sport of gymnastics, because I've got a lot
yep.
of connectivity to that particular sport. And what often happens in gymnastics that I think could be a lesson for other coaches, and even if you just train yourself, is first off, gymnastics is inordinately dangerous, and injuries are ridiculously frequent because of the unique rigor that it places on the body. So if you go into a gymnastics club, it is very common to see kids in there with slings on, mm-hmm. with you know, some type of a mobilization device. You see a lot of boots. You may see a cast. And so what happens with athletes that train in that environment, even if they've a given athlete has never been injured, what are they sort of internalizing? Oh, mm-hmm. this sport can beat you badly, mm-hmm. because they constantly see their friends with all of these medical appliances on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You immediately, whether it's conscious or not, you are storing away the fact that what I'm doing in this ginormous building with no windows that, you know, no one else really, you know, can see or understand, is I'm pursuing something that can hurt me. So the very first thing is they're getting the idea that what they're doing is dangerous.
Yep.
And yet there they are every day. So if you become, you know, exposed to a particular fact or a particular reality, you absorb that reality. It becomes normal. This is routine. Mm-hmm. I do something that can hurt you or can hurt me.
Yep.
So if they get injured, what happens? Well, they know that it's normal, mm-hmm. because in that sport, it's completely normal to get wrecked, you know, to be,
yeah.
12 years old, 14, 17, and going in for surgery again, because that's the world of a gymnast. So do you think that a gymnast might actually be better at handling being injured than, you know, a wrestler or a football player or something like that, where even, you know, as tough as those sports are, don't routinely injure people to the same degree, and not at an early age. You know, if you're a gymnast, you may have been beat up since you were 8 years old. Well, if kids are 8 years old and getting beat up playing peewee football, somebody's probably getting, you know, relieved of their coaching duties.
Yeah,
It's just an extreme example. But the other thing that's very important is, okay, we understand that they get that injuries are possible. Heck, they're likely. But what happens when the athlete is injured, at least at the clubs that, you know, I've been connected to, they keep, mm-hmm. those kids coming to practice, mm-hmm. not in an unsafe way, not to push kids past what they shouldn't be doing per their doctor's orders or whatever their physical therapist says, but to keep them in the gym mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if a kid has to, you know, just go over to one corner and they're doing some stretches, and maybe they're jumping on an exercise bike for a while, they're still part of the process. They're still, mm-hmm. at work. They're still, you know, with their coaches. They're still with their friends. They're doing what they do. They never allow the athlete to get disconnected. And that is huge, because I think what happens when we're injured, Eric, is that we, mm-hmm. we can start to become disconnected from our sense of ourself.
Yes.
You know, I'm no longer, you know, Eric Fiorello, you know, mega strong guy, because I'm injured. And, mm-hmm. you know, guys like us who sort of, you know, train in our own place or with some buddies because,
yep.
we're not a good fit for commercial gyms or whatever,
right.
we're sort of logistically prone to being isolated anyway. And, mm-hmm. that can be devastating emotionally, mm-hmm. mentally.
No, so I agree with you.
Yourself in the game is absolutely, yep. huge.
Well, Mike, you know, when you hit that, you nailed another one on me. When I tore my bicep in Iceland, what was my first inkling? I got to get on a plane and get home, get it fixed, all right? All the guys were great, you know, especially Bill Crawford. He's like, you know, when I went to the hospital, obviously, I knew what would happen. You know, Bill's an MD. Bill knew exactly, because Bill tore his 2 days later. So I went there. Obviously, they could fix it if I wanted to do it. You know, I'd called home. My mom went to my doctor and told him what had happened. You know, we set it up where I'd go out. She sent me to obviously someone that specializes in that, MRI, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the thing, which you really hit upon, and I just now I thought of it. I stayed with the team, okay? Because, I mean, I had a few days. We were leaving anyways. I didn't have to have the arm done that day. I wasn't in any pain, believe it or not. I didn't even take any medication. They gave me one pill when I went in there. That was all I took. They gave me a bunch of stuff. I didn't take one thing. Of course, you know, with a torn bicep, black and blue, the whole deal. But I stayed with the team, and you know something? It was the best thing I ever did because, like you said, I was still part of it. Now, I couldn't do anything anymore, but you know what? Now I was elected the driver. You know, Toyota sponsored us. I drove one of the big vehicles with the guys in it. We had a good time. Not going to tell you I felt great because I didn't, but I was still connected. Very important. And when I got home, I think that made a big difference in, you know, I'm feeling sorry for myself and am I ever going to train again? Because that's the first thing I asked the doctor in Iceland. You know, am I ever going to be able to lift again? Because it frightens you to the point where you say, you know, we do train in an isolated environment. I do for sure. I've been thrown out of commercial gyms. We were taken out by the police one day too. I mean, I don't belong in a commercial gym. I don't, unless it's some hardcore ass place in the middle of nowhere and they're doing all the stuff I'm doing, I just don't belong there. That's not my style. It doesn't have the atmosphere for me, et cetera, et cetera. But coming back from that and staying with everybody, you know, and then Bill tore his bicep. I hate to say it, it was the best, even though it was the worst thing I felt bodily, it was the best thing mentally for me. Because when I got back, you know, we did some things with Steve Helmicki and some other things, some other people have had these injuries, and I was able, I think, to come back much further. And really, I'll be honest with you, I didn't have many ghosts in my head when I, you know, the first time I curled, the first time I picked up a stone, I won't say I was apprehensive, but it was on my mind because you can't go into doing something like that because for sure the lights can go out on you. But I will tell you, the first time I grabbed one of those or anything that had to do with bicep stuff, I was like, okay, I hope this all holds together. And we're here today, you know, 7 years later, and we're holding together and we're going back. So, you know, the mental aspect can be conquered. There's no doubt about it. But I also think, too, Mike, that you really kind of got to be a special personality for this because, you know, we talk about in general, but I think injuries, you know, like I said in the beginning of the show, I've seen a number of I've seen friends of mine. One guy in particular, he was a great Olympic lifter, you know, not national, but he did some big things, you know, winning in New York State and all this. But he got a back injury, came back. Never the same. Came back, never the same. Then this thing's getting hurt. That thing's getting hurt. I still feel to this day he was demolished mentally, and he was a pretty tough son of a gun, but he just never handled it. He kept coming back, but it was never – I don't think it was ever a full pursuit. I think he got to a point, I really do, and I don't want to say he invented another injury or a pull, but he just seemed to pull back all the time. He never recovered, never, to this day. And I think to come back mentally, you do have to be a different kind of individual because I don't feel – well, we know for sure not everybody comes back. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's very true. If I look back to the person that I was after I broke my back in the climbing accident that I mentioned earlier – The biggest problem that gave me, you know, beyond all the, you know, the physical challenges was sure. That my self-concept had changed. It changed fundamentally. Yep. I had gone from feeling indestructible to feeling fragile. I felt fragile, and it was the worst. It was the absolute worst. You know, in those days, you know, I was not like a real big, strong guy, but I was somebody who was unstoppable, you know, in those days because, you know, nothing could shut me down. I would find a way around whatever until that happened. And it's very easy to be strong, focused, motivated, particularly for people who are, pardon me, you know, physically gifted, very strong and so forth. But if they've never dealt with, you know, something like what you've experienced or, you know, just any sort of significant obstacle, they only, again, it gets back to, you know, they think they know. They've never been truly tested. You know, great genetics, you know, being strong, that's great, but let's throw something at that person. Let's throw several things at that person. That'll show us what they're really made of. You know, when I felt fragile, the feeling was so horrible that I was willing to endure any amount of pain, discomfort, disappointment to try to undo that. And that was the secret. You know, I wasn't, you know, I don't know if I was courageous. I may have just simply been scared. I may have been frightened of that feeling so much that I couldn't stop trying to undo it. And, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, in the long run, because I was successful getting past that. But there's no question, the sense of who we are when we've been damaged. And this is something, if people go to my blog, the first time I tore my bicep, you know, 5 years ago now, I wrote several blogs specifically about that experience, and I wrote them right after the injury happened and everything was a question mark, you know, and just reading those posts just to get a handle of what that person is like, you know, when everything is unknown. The surgery is, you know, a long way off. And then there's some follow-up blogs that talk about, you know, sort of post-surgery up to the point where I was just about to be medically released to go back to doing the kinds of things that I like to do. So that, it's very easy to pick out examples of people I think we all know who, after the setback, you know, and physical setbacks are particularly devastating for those of us who are very physically oriented people. Because again, you know, we know who we are when we're doing, you know, what we like or what's meaningful to us. But if you take something like that away, you know, even if we know that it's going to be temporary, we're not us anymore.
Nope.
And if we're not,
I agree.
You know, if I'm not me, if you're not you, then who are you?
Exactly.
And how are you going to deal with being that person for a while?
Mike, you know what I found, seriously? And I've never really said this to many people. I blame myself for the whole thing that happened to me. And I think that's a big part of injury. Maybe not. Maybe it's just me. But I played the blame game pretty hard on me, where I beat myself up pretty bad mentally. I said, well, I didn't train hard enough. I should have never lifted that stone that way. What am I going to do here now? You know, I'm responsible for what happens at this point again. You know, I traveled all this distance. I fell flat on my face. Obviously, I've never been a guy about what public perception was, but, you know, there was people that were close to me. It was like, okay, what are they going to say now? How many are going to tell me, you know, I told you so? Am I ever going to get back here again? That can be more devastating than anything to you, because it's like now you've taken yourself and you're like circling the wagon, it feels like, all the time. And all this mental shit is coming out of you. And I look at it two ways. I'm a guy that doesn't like to hold a lot of stuff in. Maybe that's how I know that's how I work. A lot of times I'll say a lot of things and I get rid of it. And maybe that was just my way of my mind processing what happened to me. But it was I made things very hard on me for a long time. And would I do it again differently? Probably not. Maybe a little smarter. I hope I never have anything like that again. But when you're playing with big rocks and you're playing in different environments and body might be a little more tired than you think one day than the next, you know, you're traveling 3, 4, 5, 6 hours to get to your destination after you've just picked something big up. We all know sitting in a car, I don't care how many times you get out, truck, it's still hard on the body. It's physically tiring, mentally tiring, the whole thing. So when you have all that thrown together and you get something like that, something's going to give no matter what. And I just felt that I gave myself a mental beating worse than anybody probably ever could. And in some ways, I felt I deserved it. But in other ways, I was wrong about it because, you know what? You can't control. We don't know what forces are all over us at any time. I couldn't control that happening. Whatever happened, happened, and I had to accept that, fix it, and decide, are you going to go back after this, or are you going to, I don't know, as they say, get in good shape, I guess, you know what I mean? And the answer was no. And then the real answer was yes. And it was like after I decided to get myself together physically, I had to get that big mental end together, and I did it. And I think I did it very well, but that's one thing that happens to you with an injury. You can at times, and I'll ask you if that's happened to you, is you can really mentally beat yourself into the ground verbally in what you're thinking. What do you think about, I mean, Mike, you've been around a lot more people than me with things like that. What do you say about that?
Here's what was interesting about what you just said to me is that, it wasn't about the beating yourself up part. Because there's two kinds of people, okay, and it works like this, in my estimation, that if something goes wrong, we'll say, you know, a certain group of people will not beat themselves up. They will beat everyone else up around them, whether, you know, there's any logic to it or not. They will complain about, you know, well, it's the weather, it's, you know, it's my parents, it's my boss, it's TV, it's whatever. And yep. Then there is a certain percentage of people that if something goes wrong, they do what you do. It's all inwardly, internally focused. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done that. If only I would have, you know, I. Now, what's going on there is we are seeing somebody who, even in the face of disappointment, is still completely clear on who's responsible for what goes on in their life, and that is us. We are all responsible for what goes on in our own lives. You know that. You don't even, yep. You know it so much you never even have to think about it. So your response when you are mad was not to be mad at anyone else. It was to be mad at you. Yep. Now, whether, you know, these things were your fault or they were just, you know, an understandable byproduct of doing dangerous things, which, you know, that's what I think it was probably more of. We yeah. still, at the end of the day, you know, people like us, people who listen to this show are the types of people who get that, hey, I'm the one, you know, driving the train. So yep. if my train goes off the tracks temporarily, I'm probably going to take it out on me because there's no one else to take it out on. It wouldn't make sense to take it out on anyone else. So yep. that's not necessarily fun. I mean, A, whatever the thing was that happened, it sucks, it still sucks. And yep. beating ourselves up still kind of feels like, you know, it sucks. But I think it's emotionally healthier because it simply reflects that we are all about accountability. We are all about, you know, taking responsibility for our own actions, which also means that we get to experience the joy of the payoff when we yep. pursue relentlessly those things which are meaningful to us. That's just how we're wired. So what you got, it was a very specific example of this is who you are, Eric, and who you are is the right kind of person to continue to pursue the kinds of things that Eric wants to pursue.
Yep.
So
yep.
as crappy as it felt, it reinforces that you are on the right kind of path. You are living the way that you need to live in order to do the kinds of things you want to do. That's my take on that.
Oh, you're right. And, you know, Mike, you know, there's nothing like persistence to build self-confidence. Self-confidence, you know, leaks right into success. You got to be relentless in not only your expectations, but your pursuits with everything you do. And I know people say, well, it's hard and this and that. You know something? Sometimes life is going to be hard, all right? Sometimes life is going to slap you so hard across the face, it's going to feel like it snapped your neck, okay? But the difference between the people that pursue things that have high expectations for their life, for their dreams, for their hitting that bullseye, as I say, I can't tell you how many times in my mind's eye I see that big red circle. And people will be like, well, that signifies to me that I am chasing that big red circle and I'm going to catch it. And once I catch it, I've got what I want, and then we're going to go pursue the next thing. Now, we're all driven different. I've always been a very driven guy, probably not like I am now because I've got my ass on the line very hard right now with my business and with all these other things I want to do. This is the turning point. We have to now become very successful in a way where I can support myself fully through all these things I'm doing. You know, we don't need to get in any more of that, but anybody that knows, you have to make currency to obviously to survive. Just to do this show is very expensive to do every month, and I would never charge for content or anything like that. I don't believe in any of that stuff. Everybody on here is the same way. Our pursuit is to offer solutions and help people. I could have a nickel in my pocket, and if you asked me, I'd still help you for nothing. It wouldn't matter to me. That's how I'm wired. That's how I've always been. That's how we were raised. I mean, without being ridiculous, obviously, but I've always been a guy that believed in helping others. I don't own information. I've done a lot of big things. I've come up with a lot of ideas, but so what? You know, if I can help you in your pursuits, that's the biggest thing. And just you now spread it to the next 10 people. But the thing I think that sets all of us apart that are in this big thing, whatever we're doing, you know, gymnastics, bending, breaking, you know, as in your pursuits with, you know, taking bricks and hammering them right down the center, you know, the chains, everything, you know, I don't care what it's all interrelated. I don't care what you call it. You call it barbells, chain, it's all strength. It's all interrelated. But the difference is we have such, I'll speak for myself and then we'll shift it right to you, Mike. My expectations are so high, and they've always been, and I've had high expectations for a lot of people, whether it's, you know, friends, family, girlfriends, whatever. I hate to say it, too, and I don't want to sound like a negative Joe here, but I think sometimes my expectations are too high for people. I've been bashed in the face and fallen on my face more times than I'd want to recount with you here. But the difference with me where I don't let it sour me or destroy me is this. I always have those wide-eyed, you know, look, feeling, thought that, you know something, I'm going to meet somebody that's got my expectations. That suddenly out of nowhere comes whoever it is, and it's like, I've been waiting for this forever, man. And when you can get, you know, I don't know. I can't speak for either one of you, but when I see out on Facebook, like you and your wife, and we've talked about this before, you know, whether it's your wife, your girlfriend, your weights, whatever it is, it's got to be, you know, I've met a lot of things that probably did measure up, but not to the point where I want now yet. And I think that's just changed from the last 3 years. I think that's the greatest thing, to have somebody to share and have these big, you know, expectations, and they're pushing you and you're pushing them, and you build this solid bridge between each other, which is unbreakable. And I do believe it still exists out there. I don't care how many people tell you there's no such thing, and, you know, everybody's disposable, and, you know, your goals are just bullshit. I don't believe in any of that. I don't. I would dig a hole and build a wall around me before I'd ever do that. And that's kind of like what we were talking about before, where it's not that we're lone wolves, but in some ways we are. You know, we're out training in environments most people wouldn't go near. We train alone. We think at a different level. Things that people like, we just kind of like, yeah, okay, who cares? You know, the way we do things, people might admire, but they're like, these guys are out of their mind, all right? So your relationship is always going to be different. But once you meet somebody that exceeds or basically has the same expectations as you, I just think that could be the – at least in my case, that's what I see is the greatest thing that will happen to me down the road. But right now, my expectations are so high that I can't look at anything but, you know, it's like the roller coaster going up, 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 and it just stays at the top. That's pretty much where I am today. So I'll send it back to you, sir.
Okay. So perhaps a couple of parting thoughts on expectations.
Sure.
From what you've just described, I really like. I think that it relates to something that I talk about a lot, you know, when I talk about excellence, and that excellence is an unreasonable outcome. You know, people who generate excellence, you know, whether it's in, you know, in their academics, or they're very creative, or they're very physically accomplished, or, you know, they do a lot in business. Excellence is unusual.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen often. So anybody who is just tirelessly pursuing a certain level of achievement for themselves in whatever area it is, ends up, I believe, putting people off, making
yeah.
people uncomfortable. And you have to understand that, because if you aspire to excellence, if you have high expectations for yourself in a given area, then, you know, a lot of people are just not going to be good being around that. You know, I know that when I was younger, I started to feel as though I might just be a little bit crazy. Because
yeah,
I didn't feel like anyone understood me, and I didn't understand most people. Yep. Fortunately for me, as I became more accomplished in the training arena, and, you know, I was traveling more and having the opportunity to meet more and more people, eventually I started meeting people like me.
Yep. Yep.
And it was, there was something that was sort of reassuring about that, you know, because, I had kind of gotten to the point early on where I started thinking, you know, am I actually the only person that thinks like this, you know,
exactly.
that you know, lives like this, that sees the world like this? And the answer was no. I just had to get around a little bit to find some more of those people. And of course, one of the cool things about, you know, everybody being connected, you know, online, you know, is now we know that there's plenty of people like us, and and we're fine, and we're awesome, and we're crazy, you know, in a good way. And, you know, we can kind of pursue that. But, you know, like seeks like, and, you know, you have high expectation. I'll step back. One of the cool things that I was hearing you talking about is sort of you're relating high expectations in the context of relationships. And yeah, I was just, you know, sort of talking about social relationships a moment ago, but you have high expectations for whomever it is that, you know, you're going to want to have a personal relationship with. But the thing that makes that okay, the thing that gives that balance is it's not because, you know, I want someone who has, you know, X, Y, Z, you know, and all of these sort of unreasonable ideas. You actually have very high expectations for yourself. You don't want somebody super special just because you want someone super special. You want someone super special, however you choose to define that, because you sort of live life as a super special person. Not that you're saying that you're special. It's, you know, it's not an ego thing. It's not self-aggrandizing, but you pursue life in a serious way. You know, you get that, you know, this adventure is as exciting as we make it. So, you know, for those of us that want to make it really exciting, we need to be with somebody that can handle that and is also kind of a super exciting person. You know,
absolutely.
The advantage that I have with my wife, just as far as compatibility goes, well, first off, we've known each other for absolutely ever. We've been married a really long time, and, you know, we've had lots of time to experience life together. But she is an excellent person. You know, she demands a lot of herself, and she is somebody who, depending, you know, just for other women, might be a little bit off-putting, you know, because she can seem pretty intense. You know, so guys like us can also seem pretty intense to normal people, but that's okay. It's, you know, you have to be comfortable. It's almost a leadership thing, you know, within a certain sphere, you have influence, you know, as a leader, as somebody that people look to, well, what does Eric think about this? And that,
yep.
and that's people who know you, and that's people who listen to this show. You know, and I think that you understand that intuitively, and you have embraced that, and it's part of why the, you know, the show has been successful, and why I think people like it. It's because you're not being anything except Eric.
Exactly.
But this is actually you. So, you know, you're living your truth. You're an authentic guy. And the people that are on this show are all sort of, you know, one percenters in yeah. one area or another. You know, we've all got our own various areas of individual pursuit, but we all speak the language of excellence. We all speak the language of high expectation. And that is, it's, once you find some people that also speak your language, it's very affirming. You know, it's yep. very validating. You know, it reminds you that, yeah, it's worth it to live this way, you know, to beat ourselves up, to push ourselves, you know, to care greatly about things, you know, to really yes. be invested in what we do, because, you know, the more meaning we give the things we do, the more meaning we experience.
No, I agree.
So, that is my soliloquy on high expectations today.
No, I think it's great, Mike. And you know what it is? We care a lot. That's what it is. And we care about ourselves and the others around us. And a lot of people just aren't like that. And it throws them for a loop. And that's okay, because, you know, The ones that are meaningful, like you said, you know, you're always going to find one another. It's going to happen. It goes for everything you do physically, everything out there. Nothing gets cut off from when you're lifting a weight. You're still the same guy or gal walking around out there connected into something. You know, life just isn't in pieces and you know, I'm here, I'm there, and there. No, we're all interconnected like that. But I do think, and we'll go to you and I'll have you give all your information out, is I think that if you don't have high expectations for yourself, you can get by in the world. But how many of those people that get by in the world we meet up with that are very unhappy, and then they'll meet somebody like you or I or somebody out there, and they'll just be enamored. I mean, I've talked to people before, and it's like their eyes go from almost shut to being pinned back wide open. They can't believe somebody's walking around talking like this, or, you know, looks like this or whatever. And they want, you know, we talked about that gold nugget. They want that secret. What does Mike Gillette got that I don't? Or what does Eric have that I don't? What's the secret? What can I buy from them? What can they tell me? Or could I hang around with them for a year? Am I going to get it? Chances are you're probably not going to get it, all right, because it falls back on your responsibility. Would it be good if you hung around with people like that? Yeah, because eventually it is going to get through to you, but there's more than meets the eye. And I'll leave it at that, Mike. Give out all your information, anything that's pertinent to what you're doing, and just let me take it and then hang on the line for a minute if you would, please.
All right, great conversation. This is a phenomenal topic.
Yep.
For people who want to, you know, dig a little bit deeper into my world and the types of things that, you know, I help people with, they can do so free of charge at MikeGillette.com, MikeGillette.com. A lot of free content there, and also links to all of my social media, YouTube channel, et cetera. And it's a good way to sort of start, you know, drinking from this, the well of mental improvement. And I'd be really happy to have people check that out and ask questions and give feedback.
Yep, absolutely. Don't forget Mind Boss, too. Push that out.
All right, yeah. Mind Boss on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. It's my latest book, and it's entirely just a very user-friendly owner's manual for just learning how to kick ass, basically, by, you know, figuring out what you want, figuring out what's in the way, figuring out how to plan for it, and executing that plan.
Absolutely. And then the big word at the end, success. I can never say that enough. That's the beauty. You got anything else, Mike?
That's it.
Okay. This is Motivation Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docspreferred.com, Sorenex.com. Don't forget, too, Hearts Collision. That's for New York State residents, 518-477-7937. Steven Santangelo. Don't forget, unleash your strength through relentless metabolic endurance through 100% pure, wholesome, organic foods. Athlete's Choice is the only product with the ultimate results you're looking for. You can get a hold of Steven in two ways, primalcreations@aol.com, or you can get him on Facebook at Steven Santangelo 75. That's STEPHEN.SANTANGELO.75. Tell him Motivation Muscle sent you. Also, too, we've got our good friend Jason. Go out to planayearofworkouts.com, or you can go to Amazon Prime. It's only $5 for this. Go out and take a look at it. This guy is a great guy, and I appreciate everybody this year that has jumped on board with us and is helping us with the show. Obviously, it's very beneficial to keep everything going here. Go out to Fiorella Barbell Co. and grab the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle. Free download. It's an ebook. All you got to do is leave your email address like we talk about here. Go out and just read the stuff. I mean, you don't know what it's going to do. It might set a red flag, say, you know something, I never thought of that. I'm going to try it. Also, Strength Times Power Equals Success, the Winner's Circle. Don't forget about that. That's out on FiorellaBarbellCo.com. Sponsorship is huge here. Obviously, right now we're running in January. It's $100, which is $400 off what we normally charge. You're getting 5 to 15 podcasts a week. I can tell you this, I don't know anybody out there that offers a deal like that. And, like Mike was saying a little while ago, everybody on here is authentic. What you hear with me, if Mike and I were sitting in a room together, we might get a little bit more abrupt with some stuff, but, this is pretty much me. You want authenticity? We're doing some big things with this website. I can't announce it. I hopefully be by the end of the month I'll have everything. When you hear what we're doing with this show, it's going to blow your mind. It's going to be unbelievable. So stay tuned for that. But remember this, $30 goes to muscular dystrophy. This is one of the one times Mike and I didn't talk about Jimmy. Jimmy's my brother. He'll always be my brother. He's the catalyst of FBC and Motivation and Muscle. Everything is dedicated in his honor. My brother, you know, we talk about admiration. There's a lot of people I admire, but nobody like him. I seen a young man still love life after he was dealt probably one of the hardest cards you could ever get, and he lost his life as a young teenager. But Jimmy's always sitting on my right shoulder. I know he is, and I love him dearly, and we all miss him. We especially miss him this time of year. But you know what? He never tell me to lay on my ass and quit. And I can tell you this, he'd tell you the same thing. So go out to FiorellaBarbellCo.com, fill out the form. $30 goes to muscular dystrophy for flu shots for the kids. If we can keep these kids alive, it really matters. You'll never meet a greater group of kids. They've always got a smile on their face. They don't see things the way we do, believe me. So go out there and, you know, let's help them out. Let's keep us around for at least 25 or more years, and let's get 10 million people listening to this show. I promise you we're going to take it all. Next thing, we're at FiorellaBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. That's what we've got, and we thank everybody. If there's a particular show you'd like Mike and I to do, FiorellaBarbell@NICAP.R.com. I'm sure Mike and I can come up with anything you need. So don't hesitate. Don't hesitate about putting stuff out on Motivation Muscle. Let us know what you think about the show. What do you like? What don't you like? Who would you like to come on here? Et cetera, et cetera. Don't be shy. That's all I can tell you. Let's see. If you want to get a hold of me on Facebook, it's Fiorello Barbell, Motivation and Muscle. Twitter, it's at Fiorello Eric. And I'll leave you with these things here. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to talk to them. Words have meaning. We've proven it again today. Words have meaning. Secondly, as my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to somebody or give them a smile. That might be all they get that day. I'll say this till we're done. Look at all the people walking with their head down, and it's not because they're just texting either. Thirdly, as the Hoos of Steel Stone says, domination in blood red on both sides. We are domination. We are going to kick ass this year like you've never seen before, I promise you. And as I always say, no one is ever going to clip our balls. And as Russell Fur said, when I listen to your show, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. Russell, that'll be on to my last show, to my last breath, believe me. And obviously today was a great day. Mike Gillette is our first guest of 2016. I couldn't be happier. Mike, what can I say? Another classic show. I got to call him that now. Thanks for being on, sir.
Always my pleasure, Eric.
It's always great to have you, Mike. So for Mike Gillette, Mike will be on next month. If you're not familiar, Mike is going to be on with me monthly, and we'll talk to you next month. But for Mike Gillette, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks. Be a steward of strength. Do not stand on the sidelines. Get involved. Get involved. So we'll talk to you next month, and I've got a big list of shows coming up this week. And have a great week, and go out and pump some iron and rip some stones up, and you know the whole deal.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.